Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are on paper 46, section 7, which is old single column, page 527. All right, so let's remember that we have these four different types of geographic layouts for different types of beings to have residential and administrative areas. We've done the circles and the squares. We have the rectangles and the triangles left to do. And as we go to the rectangles and the triangles, we won't get a lot of info, and it's because we have definitively shifted away from that which has a more immediate relationship to the ascension scheme. Remember, the revelation is very, you know, by mandate, is limited to them talking about that which is related to the ascension scheme, and they're not allowed to reveal, you know, much beyond that. Remember that when all is said and done with the grand universe, these architectural worlds are not as they seem today. You know, they're not the places that you hopscotch across to get to the Isle of Paradise from your nativity sphere. When all is said and done, every architectural world is combined with every fully engaged and re-engineered nativity sphere, and they all become of like kind. When all is said and done, you have 7 trillion inhabited worlds, and that includes all those architectural worlds. We're a long ways away from having the final inhabitants, you know, of a very evolved, genetically engineered humanity on this planet, but they're not a long ways away from those end-of-the-age-like inhabitants on the architectural worlds. All these architectural worlds have native beings. And basically, those are all unrevealed. Right? They're not allowed to reveal any of those native beings on all these worlds. You know, so basically, the beings that are parallel to us on these worlds, as opposed to just the beings that are helping us as we're blowing through. Right? And there's very few exceptions to that. Not being allowed to reveal those beings. So that's what the rectangles and the triangles are about. They're much more about that world being parallel to our kind of world, deeply settled in light and life, and the natives of that world. Okay, so let's jump in, and you can see from the title, we do get one of these native types of creatures that they can talk about, and that's going to be the main topic because they can't really talk about anything else. All right.
The rectangles, section 7, the Spernagia. The 1,000 rectangles of Gerasim are occupied by the lower native life of the headquarters planet, and at their center is situated the vast circular headquarters of the Spernagia.
Okay, so let's just start with that tiny little tidbit there. Okay, so, you know, you're left to kind of speculate again, but you see you have a big central area is where the Spernagia are, and then you've got the rectangles arranged around it. So, you know, I mean, a first simple assumption, you can maybe just think of these rectangular plots being radially outward, you know, around that circle, you know, and when you're thinking of rectangles, that immediately reminds you of some beautiful little carved out field somewhere out west here, a nice little rectangular patch of wheat or something. And you can see in the first sentence of the next paragraph, you know, they talk about the agricultural doings of the Spornaja. But, you know, see here that the occupied by the lower native life. And you may recall back in the constellation, we're talking about the constellations, they mentioned this unrevealed native life in passing. And they, you know, they mentioned it in passing here, you know, back in the that section that preceded the circles, you know, preceded all going through the different geometries here. You know, they were talking about you had the permanent inhabitants of the material sons and daughters, but then they say, neither do we mention numerous other fascinating orders of spirit and near-spirit creatures. Right? And I mean, that's what we're talking about here. All these unrevealed lower-type beings that... you know, in some way that we don't have any way to even speculate about, really, you know, is very appropriate to these worlds. Yep.
Would they be vaguely similar in their lowliness, to lack of a better word, than the midwares?
Right. I mean, the lowly beings are us. Material sons and daughters, midwayers, the lower angels. I mean, you know, we're talking about beings down in our neck of the woods in the vertical hierarchy.
Us?
Yeah. Yeah. Remember, you know, we know that there's beings that are quite like us, the material sons and daughters there. But there apparently are a lot of other near-type beings. And you just don't have... I mean, that's as specific... as it gets, you know, is right here in this one where, you know, like I said, where it, you know, it describes them as spirit and near spirit creatures. Back in the constellation sections, you know, they didn't give you that, anything that specific, right? So that's all we know. We're going to have all kinds of interesting new discoveries when we get there about all kinds of inhabitants. You know, so it's, you know, they'll say there's the Havona natives, you know, for instance, and, you know, I mean, every place has its natives, and the only ones that they can really mention on this order are the Spornaja, they're going to talk about here finally in greater detail, and, you know, back there, you may remember when they were saying that, you know, they said, for example, Gerasim enjoys the efficient services of the Sporanga. Okay, so we have the Spornaja and the Sporanga are the only two of this whole vast unrevealed orders of beings that they tell us about, because those two have some significant interaction with us as ascenders going through, and that's all, you know, all we have in terms of the, you know, we don't really know how many different kinds. I mean, you know, it's apparently quite a few from the way they're describing it, but. You know, different orders. That's all we know. So apparently, we can just picture this great big area that we're not even going to talk about the rectangles themselves. See, I mean, it's just they're not going to discuss them at all directly. They're just going to focus in on the center. And we saw that some with some of the circles. Remember, where they really didn't tell us anything about the circles directly. They talked about the what was in the center of those circles, but. All right, so there's an awful lot that they can't talk about here. Anyway, so let's think about this Spornaja here.
On Gerasim, you will be amazed by the agricultural achievements of the wonderful Spornaja. There, the land is cultivated largely for aesthetic and ornamental effects. The Spornaja are the landscape gardeners of the headquarters worlds. And they're both original and artistic in their treatment of the open spaces of Gerasim. They utilize both animals and numerous mechanical contrivances in the culture of the soil. They are intelligently expert in the employment of the power agencies of their realms, as well as in the utilization of numerous orders of their lesser brethren of the lower animal creations, many of which are provided them on these special worlds. This order of animal life is now largely directed by the ascending midway creatures from the evolutionary spheres.
Okay, so that's kind of interesting, the final little statement that, you know, we don't really know what was happening before there were a lot of midwayers, you know, because there would have been a long time before you had midwayers coming from a world in the local system, because remember, normally they stay until the world gets into light and life. So, you know, who was overseeing them before that, we don't know. But as you know, everyone who's read the book knows, the Spornaja, unlike the Sporanga, are not beings. They're not personal creatures. Right? They're just animals. The fanciest of animals in the universe of universes. And it's very important to spend some definitive time reflecting on the fact of the Spornaja, what little they say about them, but you know, look closely at what they say about them, to begin to help yourself to understand what the word personality means. You know, to recognize that everything you're initially going to be thinking about that word means is not what it means. You're going to be thinking about fancy animal stuff. Okay, I mean, just notice the things that they've tossed out in passing. You know, they're responsible for aesthetics. You know, they are both original and artistic. You know, we've got to recognize that your mind is a very profound fact, and it doesn't have to have the sixth and seventh adjutants. It has the fullness of the first five, like the Spornaja do. It can manifest all kinds of very, very profound things. You know, the issue about personality is not in the complexity of what the mind can manifest. You know, that persons can manifest fancier things than animals can't. That's not the distinction. There are, you know, I mean, think about some of the master physical controllers that aren't personalities, right? And, you know, and their ability to be artistic and manipulate is completely beyond anything you can imagine, right? You know, they leave the most profound personal human on a nativity sphere in the dust in terms of their ability to manifest really cool things from their mind. You know, the thing that distinguishes a person from a non-person is you've got mind energy. It obeys laws. Okay, and it just chugs along obeying those laws, that mind energy. The only difference between what's going on inside of yourself compared to what's going on inside of myself, same exact laws of mind energy, but there's different boundary conditions placed upon that self, mind, that mindal self, that mind system, mind energy system. My slightly different boundary conditions lead to those laws chugging along through a different set of forms, then the mind energy chugs along through, you know, for you. But, I mean, it's just like any physical problem. You know, once you know the laws of the material energy and the boundary conditions, you can calculate, you know, to the nth degree everything that happens in that system. Right? And they can do that with all of our mindal selves. They know your exact boundary conditions to 90 decimal places. They know all the laws of mind energy to perfection. They can calculate every form that's going to be in your mind 50 years in advance down to the last little jot and tittle. You know, just like we can calculate exactly where each planet is going to be, you know, 10,000 years from now or something.
Oh, right?
Right? The difference between mind energy and that sort of phenomenon and personalized mind, a personalized self, is that if you have a personality, you have a transcendence of the mind energy. That personality is spirit pattern, engaging a phenomenon above that mind energy. And you can insert yourself down into that causal chain of mind energy and redirect it. You know, you can change the boundary conditions at will, you know, as it were. You know, just in the same way I reach over and I pick up this glass. There's no causal law of physical energy or anything that dictates that that glass should suddenly rise off that table, or, you know, at that point in time. And, you know, I'm using mind over matter, you know, to move that. You know, I'm altering the causal sequence of that matter from above with mind. But that's not free will. That's just self-assertion. Changing the causal sequence in matter is not free will. So Srinivasa changed the causal sequence in matter, you know, until the cows come home. That's what they're talking about. They're endlessly changing the causal sequence in the matter on these worlds. Okay? But they can't change the causal sequence in the mind energy of their self, of their mindal self. You know, and it's sad to record that most beings that are shaped like we are on this planet don't change the causal sequence in their mind energy either. And to that degree, they're just a fancy animal, right? And they think that they have a different personality because they have different boundary conditions, different material boundary conditions on their mind energy, and they think that's their personality. No, that's their temperament. Right? You know, someone who can see the sequence in your mind energy and knows the laws of mind can watch like, oh, there's some personality just inserted in there, because in and of itself, you wouldn't get form B from form A.
And it's Chris's personality.
Right. And the archangels can study it carefully and notice the way each of our personalities insert themselves like that is unique. Right? And they keep a record of all those exact precise formulas of how you alter mind energy, the laws, the causal sequence of mind energy. That's free will. Yeah.
Is there any particular point that we can actually that this can actually occur with us, or is it just according to our degree of maturity and experience?
Starting at age 6, personality engaged your mindal self, and you know, the first alterations occurred. I mean, you have this encirclement by grace and stuff, so you know you have a background of personal engagement. But the question is, have you taken delight in cultivating, doing something besides what was just there by grace? You know, do you regularly take a hold of the way you've always responded to something? Right? I mean, what your temperament dictates the next form in your mind energy is going to be. You know, is it the same sequence as when you're young and you have now glorified that's what makes me, you know, unique in the universe, is I react to a certain environmental stimulus that way? Is that what you think your personality is?
Does that have to do with self-mastery?
Yeah, it has to do with self-mastery. See, there's no way to master yourself if you can't get a hold of it and form it the way you want it to be formed.
God wants it.
Right, and of course, right. The whole question then is, well, if I have this ability to alter the causal sequence of my mind energy, how should I do it? Can I just do it any old way I damn please, and I have the free, you know, the right to do that? Well, that's what Lucifer told us. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to conform to some preset, goal for how you direct your mind. You know, that's those oppressive, so-called superiors that are telling you, you know, you have to conform to something above you, quote-unquote, right? No, you have to figure out what the universal harmony is, and you have to choose to strike step with it. That's called self-mastery, right? Right? You, you consecrate your will to the perfect will of God the Father, that gets things started. But you don't go anywhere until you start doing the other consecration, consecrating your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. Self-mastery. Consecration of will won't get you from seventh circler to sixth circler. It initiates the seventh circle, but all progress through the psychic circles is consecration of mind, not consecration of will. You know? So when you see someone who, you know, has this very definitive consecration of will, and they feel like they have these very profound spiritual experiences, what does it say in the psychic circle section? It says a seventh circler can have just as profound experiences like that as a first circler. Because that's just the consecration of will. It's boom, by fiat, it's done. But the consecration of mind is a totally separate thing. Okay, so, you know, back to the spornaja. See, so you've got these very, very sophisticated minds that can do all kinds of things, like paint a painting you've never imagined a human being able to paint, you know, or whatever. You know, if you watched them, you know, you'd be certain they were beings, that they were persons. You know, I've tried to point out, you know, it's bad enough, you know, that you can notice that, wait a minute, these animals are doing these things that I thought were human. But then you go back and you read about the evolution to get to Anna Infanta, you know, and you start reading some of the things the mid-mammals are doing, and it's like, wait a minute, I thought that was personal things. You're telling me mid-mammals had that thought and, you know, that ability? We need to challenge ourselves, you know, to genuinely recognize what it means to be human and not this false glorification of fancy animal stuff. I mean, you're just a machine. You're just a mind machine when you're not using your personality. Yeah, yeah, and a mind machine is fancier than a material machine, but it's still just a machine, right? A mechanism, a living mechanism, right? So just reflect on that. And just, you know, notice the degree, as we're reading about this spornaja, that, you know, they say things that, it's like, well, wait a minute, that sounds awfully human, doesn't it?
What comes first, or do they come concomitantly? The
chicken or the egg?
Personality or encirclement in the Holy Spirit?
Logically, you have to have an encirclement in the Holy Spirit before a personality can engage that now spirit, you know, nature. I mean, okay. It's spirit pattern.
Yeah.
Okay, but in terms of temporally, you know, it's exactly at the same time. I mean, it just comes together. But logically, obviously, if a spirit pattern is going to engage spirit, there's got to be spirit.
So the spornaja don't have the equivalent of this.
They don't have any sort of literal spirit relationship to spirit energy. You know, we aren't literally, our body, our energy, body energy system doesn't have spirit energy in it, but we have this direct engagement with spirit energy. And that's enough to get personality to identify. You know, the spiritualized mind is, you know, is enough. But they don't, you know, they have no way to have that. Because their mind energy tops out here, and the bottom of spirit energy is here, and there's this gap, and, you know, they have no way to cross it. You know, they don't have the sixth and seventh adjutants bridging that gap up to spirit energy.
See, the thought just inescapably comes to my mind that, well, why don't they get spirit energy? That's not fair.
Right, well, that's the last paragraph of the section.
Oh. Okay.
But their ability not to have that spirit form would be similar to us prior to Pentecost, before with a very, very primitive man.
No, not before Pentecost. Okay. No, before Anna Infanta.
That's kind of what I meant.
Yeah, yeah. Right? I mean, they are, you know, right up there just before you have Anna Infanta, that okay. Kind of, you know, use of mind. Only, you know, in general, you don't have an evolutionary world ever getting an animal that uses the five adjutants as extensively as they do.
Yeah.
In the same way that Adam and Eve, for instance, use mechanical mind to a greater degree than mortals do. There's always some being that's maxing out these different things. Now, there was another question somewhere, wasn't there? Oh, yeah.
Well, no? What Gene said is kind of interesting. He says it's not fair. But that's kind of like not looking at it God's way. That's kind of looking at it as an animalistic way in terms of it's not about whether it's fair or not, I don't think, necessarily. I'm just trying to bring this out a little bit in terms of, we tend to think that things aren't fair all the time, but, I don't think when you step back, and look at it from a broader picture, maybe it's perfectly fair.
Right, and that broader picture, when we use the word fair, how objectively are you using the word fair? Reflect on that a little bit. So, is your definition of fairness, well, it has to meet my specifications. I'm the archetype here. Well, I define what's fair and unfair. That's the way you're always initially thinking about it until you catch yourself. Right? It's just like saying, it's not fair that an ascender gets all the way to the Isle of Paradise, inducted into the core of finality, and then the Trinity snatches him out, makes him a mighty messenger. How unfair is that? He's been looking forward to becoming a finaliter for, billions of years, and then right at the last second, right? It's like, no. You won't be thinking like that. Every being has its place in the picture. And the closer you're getting to that place that the gods know, the more delighted you are, right? No matter what that place is. If your job is to be a permanent citizen of the Isle of Paradise because you died, at age 8 and had to be awakened on the probationary nursery, you're not going to be spending eternity screaming at the deities at the center of the aisle how unfair it is, right? Right. How dare you love me so much? But, yeah. Right. You should have just left me dead.
It's kind of like that thing about reveling in disappointment.
All right.
It's kind of interesting how that happens a lot. People, in all kinds of aspects of life.
Yeah, and the thing that I wanted to just bring up, going off of the fairness comment here as we get back into the reading, there are a lot of humans that have tried to find all kinds of techniques to get their mind in the state of a spornaja, where all is pleasant today. Why is it that you feel tension in your life? Why is it you're disappointed and disillusioned and whatnot? It's because you touch upon spirit, and it puts this tension in your mind, right? In order to have a tension in your mind, there's got to be something at both ends of the mind pulling on it, right? And the spornaja don't have their mind doesn't grab a hold of that other end, so you don't have this tension between the matter and the spirit pulling on your mind, wanting to go in different directions. They're happy as a clam in mud, right? All the time, And think about how humans, they think they find something, some sort of technique, a chemical or something that puts their mind in this at ease state. And they probably think, spirit is this unity thing, and I must be in a more spiritual state right now. No, you've just lowered your mind away from the tension. You've made yourself into a spornaja that doesn't have that, isn't engaging spirit and putting that tension into your life.
Or beneath it.
Right? Your job is to live between the two poles of the battery. Right? The two poles are the unqualified absolute and the deity absolute. And your job is to live in the universal absolute domain, the domain of raw tension.
That's a tall call.
Right?
And don't short circuit.
And if you attempt to escape from that, You know, you are attempting to avoid why you were made. You're trying to run away from God's plan for you.
Thinking about the insertion of personality into this mind field, and back to what John just said a minute ago, looking at it from the opposite point of view, I was thinking about this when I was reading the Thought Adjuster papers, and this one particular phrase jumped out at me just today about not a lot being known about the careers of the thought adjusters until they arrive on the planets of time to indwell human minds, blah, 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 and that the consummation of their triune destiny, attainment of personality by fusion with some mortal ascender. So we think of ourselves from the bottom up as our big goal is to fuse with our thought adjuster, but our thought adjusters come here to fuse with us so that they can get a personality.
The thought adjuster is trying to get up to you, not down to you. Personality is above spirit.
Yeah. So they're trying to, so an attainment of personality is one of the goals of a thought adjuster. So anyway, back to all of this that you're talking about in terms of personality, I always remember reading that.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, see, again, you know, I mean, remember, you know, that in many ways, you know, you're the end from the beginning. You have personality now. The Spernagia, you know, many speculate they'll have personality sometime in the distant future. So in many ways, they're no different than an adjuster. I mean, you know, so you're gonna start to feel sorry for these Spernagia as you read them out. It's like, well, they're just like an adjuster in some ways, right? I mean, you know, and are you going to put that upon the adjuster? The adjuster gets fragmented from the father and spends endless trillions of years bitching and moaning about how, why didn't the father make me a person? I mean, why did he make Jeanette a person? I mean, look at Jeanette. And look at me. How come I don't get to be a person? She's just a blob of protoplasm. I'm a spirit fragment. Right? I mean, you gotta avoid bringing all these ridiculous biases into your thinking about this stuff.
Right? Yeah, I always thought I had a great personality and I was great at parties.
No, that's your boundary conditions. All right.
Not anymore, Don. You don't drink anymore.
I know. It's
okay. Your Shane's got something too.
Yeah, on a more down to earth note, I'm curious about the soil.
So, yes. Yes.
I mean, on our world, the soil happens by an evolutionary process.
Right.
So. I mean, okay, so take bacteria. You know, soil is full of bacteria, and they play kind of, a, you know, play a role in that here. Yep. Are there bacteria on Jerusalem?
Where do the bacteria come from?
The master physical controllers.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. There's master physical controllers there, too, right?
But they don't terraform Jerusalem, right?
Yeah, of course they did. How do you think it got its nitrogen and oxygen atmosphere and all? I mean,
but they have 200 elements.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's that stuff too, but.
So we can think of the architectural spheres as more, in a way, kind of more evolutionary.
Right, an architecture. That's what I was trying to say up front, to recognize that an architectural sphere is an eventuated evolutionary sphere. You take the whole evolution of a normal material sphere like ours, and you eventuate that. You produce the end result by fiat, by an eventuation, rather than having the supreme build it over time.
Water into wine.
Right? I mean, beings that came down from the aisle built those worlds. The supreme is building our world. And when all is said and done, guess what? The worlds will be the same. Doesn't matter if existential deity builds it or experiential deity builds it, it's building towards the same end.
Same dirt here and there.
Right. When all is said and done, we'll have the appropriate kind of fancy dirt. Remember, like I said, I mean, you got to remember, the entire planet will be re-engineered by the time you get to deeply into light and life. Especially by the time you get to fifth stage of light and life, they start significantly re-engineering everything.
Yeah, we're already example.
You know, the biology will be long, you know, engineered before that. I mean, all the animals and everything, you know, will be completely remade, you know, by the time you get into light life. You know, see, so there's a combination of the Supreme doesn't build all of these worlds, but it builds a lot of it, you know, just through the evolutionary process. And then influence from the existential deity puts the finishing touches on it. You know, it's similar to like the power beings putting the basic stuff together with a local universe. And then the Creator Son and Creator Mother Spirit come out and explain how they want the filigree, you know, on the place. But it's all roughed out before they get there. You know, and they don't have any say in that, you know, because that foundational roughed out stuff is in the hands of the architects of the Master Universe. You know, and Creator Sons aren't a high enough being to even be able to project, you know, that sort of stuff. They can't see that big enough picture. They don't even understand that stuff. And they're God.
So Chris, yep. I mean, you know, they talk about, a little later on, we'll get to it, maybe because I just didn't want to forget it when we get there, that, you know, a neighboring local universe, only about 50% of the people are just refused, you know, whereas here is like 90%.
Right.
So in that case, they're different that way. In other words, if you're not a just refused, you still...
So the difference between spirit fused, you know, like a local universe has an awful lot of spirit fuser worlds, compared to ours, you know, it has a lot of adjuster fused worlds, is like the difference what we're reading right here.
Okay,
the first two, we had circles and squares. Okay, and you know they told us a lot more about that, because it was much more related to ministering to the beings that are heading through towards where their spirit fragment came from, the aisle. Okay. Right? But there are some local universes that are very dedicated to the same sort of phenomena that you have with the rectangles and the triangles. The phenomena that's not about passing through, but just being there, right? Spirit fusers are the long-term inhabitants of a local universe that have their origin done through the evolutionary process with worlds and stuff. You know, whereas other beings that are long-term inhabitants, you know, are just made by the Creator Son and Creator Mother Spirit. See, so again, you've got two types of long-term inhabitants. You've got those, you know, that are basically just beings coming down from above and, you know, creating them. And others that the Supreme puts a lot into the creation of those beings through the evolutionary process. You know, that's just the way it always is. And so, see, again, we have this bias. It's like, isn't it all about just blowing this popsicle stand and getting to the Isle of Paradise?
Really?
You know, no. I mean, you know, any more than, you know, there will always be Havona natives that will forever be Havona natives. Originally, you had all these Havona natives. Some of them left the central universe and started working out in the seven super universes. And when you get the outer space levels, some more will leave the central universe. But even when you've got this fourth outer space level complete, there'll still be some Havona natives that will never leave. That's just they live there. That's their domain. Okay? And there'll be some ascenders probably that will never go out to the outer space levels. They will stay in charge of the super universe level forever.
Just like
those Havona natives. I mean, see, you know, it has to be that way to some degree, because Havona is the pattern, right? The central universe is the pattern, and so, right. All right. Okay, let's get a little bit more here.
Spernagia are not adjuster indwelt. They do not possess survival souls, but they do enjoy long lives, sometimes to the extent of 40 to 50,000 standard years. Their number is legion, and they afford physical ministry to all orders of universe personalities requiring material service.
Their number is legion. Because remember, they're on every architectural world. And, you know, there's a lot of blades of grass that need to be tended. So, I mean, they're just, you know, a mind-boggling number of them. All right, so, I mean, that, you know, should get you to go, whoa, 40 to 50,000 standard years?
Times seven.
Times five, right? 200 to 250,000 of our years. Okay, their body is designed to not wear out over that length of time.
They get new ones.
Well, we haven't gotten there yet. Hold on a second. No new one. The initial body lasts for 200 to 250,000 years. One body. Okay? Yours barely makes it 100. Okay? So, you should be very disgusted right now. The life carriers could have made your body like theirs. Instead, they made it so that it starts falling apart in a few decades. Okay? You go, well, I'll be, you know, one day there'll be mortals in light and life. Well, yeah, they'll live 500 years. Right? Even when all is said and done, the life carriers really gypped you on body design. They can design material bodies that could last without any aches and pains for 250,000 years.
What would the motivation
for the body be then? But they also don't evolve, right?
I'm going to thank them so much for not making me live 200,000 years on this planet.
No kidding. That's what I'm thinking.
Ours have to be made of genetics that can evolve from, you know, protoplasm, whatever. So,
right.
And
see,
they don't do that.
Very good thinking. Right. See, you know, you're getting to the logic of it. What, you know, what's the difference? Right? I mean, your body needs greater variability potential. Right? The variability comes from the design and the life carriers and the life animation. Now, the Spernagia have life animation, but they have a different design. The life carriers can pin down their design. You know, it doesn't need to have as much variability. You know, it's a fancy machine, right? Ours has to have a lot of variability, and especially, you know, that's on a decimal world, you know, they loosen the constraints even more. So there's even more variability potential than on a normal world, right? So we are as loose as you can make it without the whole thing just falling apart because you've loosened all the bolts so much. Okay, but if you tighten down all the bolts, that thing will last for 250,000 years. Yeah, but they just thread your bolt, you know, all the nuts in you, you know, in like a couple threads, you know, and the nuts is wobbling around, you know. And, right? I mean, that's you. Because you've got to be able to be much more liquid-like than solid-like. You've got to be much more morphable.
Malleable,
right, yep. Okay, see, so that, I mean, this is great. See, this is what you're supposed to be doing. You're not just you don't just read the facts about Spernagia. You know, look at all the truth that's flowing through these facts. Yeah. All these things you can think about yourself. Okay, so yeah, wow, 200 to 250,000 years. They're legion, you know, they're going to mention specifics in a little bit here. But see, they can afford physical ministry to all orders of universe personalities requiring material service. So, you know, if you could have a fairly high being relative to us, but if they still have a definitive relationship to material doings, a Spernagia can relate to them. See, so again, I mean, you know, can you potentially relate to an angel because you're a person? No. Spernagia aren't persons; they're animals. They can see all these beings right now. You can't see them, Yeah, this, if there was a Spernagia in the room, you could see the Spernagia. But the Spernagia could see all the celestial beings, the lower celestial beings in this room too, and you can't. So who's higher? Right? So again, remember, you a mind, you know, don't limit mind. Mind is, you know, can be a very, very profound thing.
These are the first guys I want to see.
Right? They're going to be really cool. You know, the interesting thing to imagine is like, well, will I, you know, if I study a material son and daughter and I study Spernagia, you know, will I be able to really start to differentiate between person and animal? I mean, right now, you'd think these are all persons, right? Yeah. You know, they would be doing things you can't even imagine doing. Right? I mean, you know, remember what they said, you know, they handle all kinds of sophisticated, you know, advanced technology and stuff, you know, that is completely beyond your abilities right now. I mean, they can engage all this fancy technology that all these high beings have built and they're, you know, using it for their, you know. they know physics at the ultimatonic level and, right, yeah. you know, we don't know anything.
I'll never forget the night when Pam was here and she wanted to take one home on a leash. You know, this is not a schnauzer. Pam would have been a good pet.
Yeah, yeah. You want to think about those cartoons about you know the fishermen, like for the fishermen. You know, who's the fish, who's the catch, you know, and who's the fisherman, you know? Right. I mean, you would feel like a complete dunderhead, primitive around them, right? And they're not even persons, right? They would be so much more sophisticated, you know, than Mozart or something, right? You know, I mean, Mozart couldn't play something on the piano until he's like four, you know, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. I mean, you know, they can do that right away as soon as they're made. So, I mean, it's just, I mean, just again, to let it sink in, you know, to what we're talking about here, a real challenge to your comfort about how much you think you're doing the old personal thing. And I'm pretty sure I'm at least a third circler.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Right. Just keep in mind. Okay. Let's see. I think we got everything there, do we? Right. I mean, you understand all the bits. You know, I mean, if they obviously don't have adjusters, they don't have souls, and they don't have personalities, they can't have an adjuster. I mean, it's all just a domino effect, you know, that they're mentioning there. The fundamental thing is they don't, as they're about to tell us, they don't have the sixth and seventh adjutants, so there's no way they can be encircled in the Holy Spirit, so there's no way they can have a personality, so there's no way they can have an adjuster, etc. All right.
Although Spernagia neither possess nor evolve surviving souls, though they do not have personality, nevertheless, they do evolve an individuality which can experience reincarnation. When, with the passing of time, the physical bodies of these unique creatures deteriorate from usage and age, their creators, in collaboration with the life carriers, fabricate new bodies in which the old Spernagia reestablish their residences.
Okay, we're going to explain that a little bit more here in a second. But okay, so these are material bodies, so they are going to eventually have wear issues. You know, they're not frictionless phenomena or anything like that. Okay. But, you know, pretty effectively so. So after 250,000 years, they've got to build a new body for them. And then they do this really fancy thing that we can't imagine, you know, that reminds you of how they're just a machine at a higher level. That mind machine stuff can be, you know, transferred over to another body machine, and the whole complex living machine just keeps going as before. Let's see, what else we have?
All the memories.
All right, there's all those issues of memories and all that sort of stuff. You know, all that, just, you know, remembers just kind of machine stuff. And
who are their creators again?
Right, and, well, that's what I was just going to mention. We don't know who the actual builder beings are here. The life carriers are the designers.
Okay.
But, you know, they're always very vague about, there's all kinds of beings that are always doing some of these technical sorts of things, and they never reveal those. Yeah, so there's some beings that we don't know about that actually build these bodies. I suppose they're the same beings that are building, you know, bodies in general. Okay. You know, when you think about all these, building bodies for the prince's staff, you know, there's always all these things, you know, they talk about. All right, so they're going about to explain what they mean by they do evolve an individuality, which can experience reincarnation. So they're going to focus on how they have a relationship to experiential reality that has this unique sort of profound superadditive nature that's very uncommon. Okay, so let's see what they say here next.
Spernagia are the only creatures in all the universe of Nebadon who experience this or any other sort of reincarnation. They are only reactive to the first five of the adjutant mind spirits. They are not responsive to the spirits of worship and wisdom. But the five adjutant mind equivalates to a totality or sixth reality level, and it is this factor which persists as an experiential identity.
Okay, a little bit of clues, but still kind of mysterious. Mm-hmm. So what they're saying is that in some super additive way, when you max out the first five adjutants, you know, if you don't max them out, you're not going to maximate them, you're not going to get this super additive thing. But if you push them all the way to their ceilings, all five of them, you get some sort of a super additive consequence where you get sort of a quasi sixth adjutant sort of a thing. You get a shade of long-term unity likeness. Remember how when you think about the adjutants, you got three that are in the moment and three that are long-term? You know, when you look on the threefold actuality with unity chart, you know, and the sixth adjutant is the long-term one that's unity-like. What they're saying is you get something that's basically a selfhood. You know, you don't just have the self of the Spernagia. You can begin to think there's a unity likeness, a selfhood that threads through that. You know, and so that connects one self to the next. There's some sort of a transcendence of the individuality of the first self and then the self of the rebuilt one, you know, so that the same selfhood is threaded through it and they go on rather than, you know, a whole new Spernagia.
It's like pulling a trailer?
No, I mean, just, you know, I mean, you know, maybe think about how the fundamental element of a given self. If you want to, try to picture it in some literal way to get it to gently seed upon another electrochemical mechanism. It's like, well, if I had some sort of like rod that this thing could hang on, you know, and I could slide it along the rod and then seed it on the next, you know, electrochemical mechanism. You know, you have a selfhood like that, you know, that allows you to have a whole bunch of selves and it still be you. It's the commonality it's the changeless fact that threads through the ever-changing and different selves. And so they're saying that you've got enough unity likeness that they have this in some way. See, they have, notice how they say that they equivalates to a totality or sixth reality level. You know, so you're still in the mode where you're kind of just thinking of the adjutants stacked up vertically. You're not really thinking about putting them into the levels of meaning, you know, where you put the first three on the first level and the next three on the second level. And, you know, you're still just thinking of stacking them vertically. So you have this sixth level where you would have the sixth adjutant, but it's this super additive thing. And see, it's not, and it's not an existential identity, it's an experiential identity. When the Father bestows personality on you, right, the Father is existential deity, that personality is an influence from eternity. When that pattern, that personality engages your mindful self, it makes that self an identity. Okay. See, they're saying, so there's an identity, but not like you have, you know, that sort of was bestowed from above, this personality identifying with the self and making it an identity. You have some sort of a, in the context of the supreme, you know, quasi-personality, quasi-pattern, you know, that's effectively an identity that is riding along this ongoing selfhood. The thing that's a little bit, in your experience, that's like that is what's going on before roughly age six, when the Father's personality engaged your mind or self. And the mother is guiding that energy system along. She's a person. Her personality is not, you know, your personality, but she is guiding it effectively in this very, you know, primitive initial state, so that when the Father's personality engages, it sort of picks up right where she then lets go. You know, so there was, you know, when prior to age six, there was this sort of diffuse influence associated with your individuality that made you this sort of quote-unquote identity. That's what they're saying these Spurnaja have, is this experiential identity. Some sort of like, it's kind of like a lump in the smoothness of the Supreme, these Spurnaja. Just like you're initially a lump and in the smoothness of the Supreme. You know, and in the bigger sense, you stay that way even after the personality engages. You don't definitively separate yourself from the Supreme until you fuse. Until that, you know, you could blend back as a drop of water into the ocean of the Supreme. Right? So it's just another shade of this, that there's you know, there's various degrees in which things can be sort of quasi separated from the Supreme. You know, so that they're like a little bit of a lump, you know, as it were, within the smoothness of the Supreme's presence. You know, just like we say when you're watching animals, you know, really you're watching the Creative Mother Spirit. They're like lumps of her mind. You know, every animal, it's just her mind. There's no separateness of purposing there. It's all her purposing, manifesting through her mind, engaging all the matter. Right? So they're just kind of like lumps of her mind. This is the same thing here. Yep. You go there.
It's already probably been mentioned, but in the second incarnation of these Spurnaja, will there be some sort of an addition besides that additional selfhood?
No, again, I mean, the selfhood is always there. Yeah. I mean, they're exactly as they were before, just without the aches and pains in their joints.
Oh, okay. But they don't.
They don't evolve.
Some way.
No, they don't evolve. They're machines.
They're just a continuity.
Yeah, it's just this drone tone. You know, they're created. You know, they're built. And they just stay exactly the same functioning as this machine, okay. You know, until things start to get a little bit creaky and rusty, and then they build a new body, and then it just keeps on going.
In terms of the use of this word reincarnation, mm-hmm. and saying that they're the only beings that experience that,
right.
Is that because they're put back into an exactly same kind of body? I mean, we, I think, are looking forward to our next bodies, but they're different. So is that why it's not called reincarnation for us?
Right. I mean, it's not even called reincarnation for a child that's resurrected on the probationary nursery.
Right.
Right. What they're getting at there is, you know, we use this word reincarnation, you know, that there's something in the carnal nature, something has, you know, been put in there. That's what they're saying. They have this experiential identity, quote unquote, right? That you can think of as residing in that body and mind energy system. You know, there's this sort of slightly transcendent fact that dwells within that house, and that is there again in that new house.
Like a program.
You know, and it's kind of like a soul, but not literally. You know, it's like this little slightly transcendent thing that you can check before and after. Yep, that same experiential identity is still there in the whole new body-mind energy system. And so it's, quote-unquote, it's incarnated again. It's reincarnated.
Yeah, yeah, but the additional experience through the second reincarnation, there still will be no additional experiential...
They're experiential beings. They're constantly accumulating experience.
Okay.
I mean, they have a mind.
Okay.
Right, so they experience, and they're accumulating experience.
Great.
Right? They're not like a typewriter.
All right.
Right? That isn't minded.
Did same machine.
Right? Right. They're a mindful machine. Right. They have experiences. Now, they accumulate experiences. They have memory.
And those memories...
Right, right. I mean, right now my memories are being stored in my electrochemical mechanism, you know, so they could rebuild that same electrochemical mechanism with all those exact energies and have all those exact memories in it. Right? I mean, just like, you know, we can transfer, you know, things from one computer hard drive to another computer hard drive or something, right? I mean, you know, they just do it with all this fancy, you know, machinery, but it's identical, right? To us, it would be a miracle. To them, it's just physics. Right, I mean, remember, that's the whole, you know, miracle is a word that a being uses when they don't understand the physics, right? You know, at some point you mature and recognize that there actually are no miracles, right? There's just ignorance.
Come
on. Right? I mean, there's mystery, but no miracles. Miracles are not real. Miracles are appearances. Something appears to be a miracle, it's just because you're ignorant of the physics.
Yes,
you know, and very high beings say, well, you know, we have to consider that a miracle because we don't understand that physics, but we don't literally think it's magical, right? We know, we just don't understand that high level of physics, right? You know, and it's always, you know, when they consider something like that, it's because it's happening in such a holistic way that it transcends their ability to encompass the phenomenon, you know? It's too big for their little mind. Even though their mind is, you know, a gazillion times bigger than ours, it's still too little for that gigantic phenomenon. And so they can't comprehend the physics of it. And so it appears to be a miracle. You know, the incarnation of a material son. And it's not literally a miracle. It's just very, very advanced physics. You know, and we've talked about it. You can begin to think about the physics, you know, in general, philosophically. You can't think about it scientifically, you know, but you can begin to understand philosophically the physics of incarnation of creator sons. You know, we don't need to go on that right now, but, you know, so it's not like they don't understand the basics like we can begin to. They just can't, you know, write down all of the equations and, right. Okay, so... Right, so they just have the ability, you know, you've got these creators, you've got, you know, beings that can manipulate things at an incredibly detailed level, complex constructs, and then they just put it all the way it was before. You know, and they notice that, you know, that same experiential identity is ongoing. Just like you know, they talk about the probationary nursery. Those kids have a potential identity. You know, if they died before even age 6, right? They build that body exactly the way it needs to be again. And the personality that would have identified still does. Or if they died after their personality had engaged, you know, age 8 or something. The archangels testify, sure enough, the exact same personality is engaged to that self as was engaged back on the nativity sphere. So they know how to build these bodies so that this selfhood, this ongoing identity, is threaded through it.
Yeah, the hardest thing I'm trying to get my mind around is what kind of language would they have? It seems like they could be taught a rudimentary language. They'd have to have language if they're going to be dealing with technical things or science.
Right.
But they wouldn't have an evolved language like we have.
They're going to be taught. You know, initially they're working with, you know, lowly beings, so they're going to know the tongue of Satania, so they can talk to the, you know, people in the early mansion worlds, you know, but they know how to speak the local universe tongue, maybe the super universe tongue too, I don't know.
Without spirit consciousness, what kind of, their meaning of words, would it be different?
But that's what you're getting at, is just recognizing how profound this super additive equivalency is here, right? They have this super additive fact that is enough like a personality, they have an identity that's enough like a personality that they can learn language, they can relate to language. See, so, the physics is more complicated. For us, you know, we can think about that we've got this definitive vertical construct and we're just thinking about the cosmos coming down through this vertical conduit. They're sort of pulling it out of the hole more. Like I said, they're like a lump of the supreme, you know. Now, maybe you could kind of think of them as, to be more precise, since being kind of quasi-personal, they're sort of lumps of God the Almighty. Mm-hmm. Right? The kind of lumps of that what's welling up from the bottom, right? And manifests this sort of quasi-personal sort of phenomenon. In some ways, it's maybe more of a power pattern-like fact than a personal purposive like that. But when all is said and done, those are the same thing, remember, in a power-personality synthesis, right? So, right. This is what you're dealing with. You're dealing with this, you know, they're actually a very profound being when you begin to think about it. Because something that's very low, in one sense, is not low. It's sort of the first thing that's welling up from the bottom. You know, like when you think about absoluteness welling up from the bottom, and supremacy is above you, and ultimacy is above that, but you wrap around and absoluteness bubbles up from the bottom. And you know, so don't underestimate how profound an automaton is just because it's way down there, subpersonal and lowly and all, right? In another perspective, it's higher than ultimacy. Wow. Right? Now you call them automatons, of course, right?
What's fascinating to me is that the entity that's being put in this new body is ageless. That's not aging. The bodies are aging. These 250,000 year long machines that they're inhabiting finally break down, but the thing inside is ageless and is able to be transferred. And that's very similar to the experience that we have inside ourselves, living in these bodies that get old, and all of a sudden you still feel like you're 17 inside.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, there definitely is, you know, they're having to replace the bodies because there's life animation engaged to that, you know, material structure. And that that engagement of life animation starts to degrade. I mean, that's why you age. It's just that it degrades very, very slowly for them. You know, and it's only after a very long time, finally, that it's starting to get... You know, just as soon as it starts to get a little bit, you know, detached, you know, they just replace the body.
So they would celebrate their original birthday, not their new.
Right, because they have an on. You know, in the same way that you're going to hearken your beginning back to here, not when you woke up on the first mansion world or the and then die again, and waking up on the second mansion world and dying again, and waking up on the third mansion, you know. Right, you're going to go all the way back to the beginning. Yeah. Okay, so let's get some more here.
I am quite without comparisons in undertaking to describe these useful and unusual creatures, as there are no animals on the evolutionary worlds comparable to them. They are not evolutionary beings, having been projected by the life carriers in their present form and status. They are bisexual and procreate as they are required to meet the needs of a growing population.
Okay, so they're bisexual, procreating beings.
Maybe that's the creators.
Well, no, I mean, you know, you have the original ones that are created or, you know, creating new bodies. You know, you've got creators, but then they procreate. Okay. Now, you know, just notice the way they describe the life carrier's designing role there. A word that you should remember being used in relationship to architects, you know, the master architects, having been projected by the life carriers. Right? So that's what I was saying, you know, in the same way that absentite master architects, quote unquote, project the forms of the finite, you know, they see it from a transcendent perspective, you know, from that eventually perspective. And the life carriers are doing, like I said, doing a similar thing. You know, they, you know, when they designed us, and they designed, you know, basically Andon and Fonta, you know, they projected forward in time, you know, which means they project forward through the evolutionary process to the basics that they want to, you know, to have in place when they have will creatures. But they start up a single-celled plant and they let the Supreme, you know, take it through the process. The Supreme will add things that they didn't design in, little details and stuff, but they've set it up, you know, and they know how the Supreme is functioning at this, in that particular age, so that the basics they want, they get. Right? So, you know, they know how to project through the evolutionary process, through the Supreme's process. And so, if, you know, instead of starting them out as single-celled plants and eventually getting spornagia out the other end, right, they just ball that whole process up and make them like that to begin with. Right? So they conform with the Supreme, in the sense that, you know, they, if they had started them out primitively, the Supreme would have taken them to that. Right? So that's, you know, so they're basically eventuated, you know, to a large degree. Like, in the same way with you. I mean, you embody the eventuation of all, you know, that evolution that went before you. You know, that's all balled up into your conception so that you don't have to repeat all, you know, 550 million years or at least 450 million years of animal evolution, right? You know, that's all balled up into your beginning, basically. So, see, that's what they project, you know, forward through the evolutionary process and just, you know, put it in place right away. Okay? And every, the beings that do that sort of stuff know when that's okay. You know, they're synchronized with the Supreme well enough that they can do something like that and not be in defiance of the Supreme, not be in rebellion. Okay? That's the way it works with every, you know, anytime, you know, a descending son comes to a world and starts inserting himself into this, into the process, they know what's going on with the Supreme. They know what they can do and what they can't do. So, just to think about that. What it is that you're trying to, you know, to do when you are trying to synchronize with the universal harmony. You're trying to get enough of a sense of the big picture that you can apply your will in a way that is not at odds and not a cross current with the evolutionary process. It's synchronized with it, you know? And maybe it actually eventuates, you know, with your foresight. You can see, oh, you can see what's going on here. Okay, let's put that together. And you know it's okay to put that together at that point. You know, Lucifer was looking, it's like, well, I know where this is all going. Let's just pull it all together now. No, it wasn't okay to do that. It doesn't matter how well he saw it. He was doing things that must be played out by the Supreme. Okay. All right. So that very humble sort of relationship to the exercise of your will. Right. I think, well, let's see, wait, did we?
No, that's a good one. I'm
trying to think, did we get everything there?
Yes.
Let's see. All right, projected that part. Yeah, okay, yeah. This next paragraph gives you a little bit more detail here.
Perhaps I can best suggest to your ancient minds something of the nature of these beautiful and serviceable creatures by saying that they embrace the combined traits of a faithful horse and an affectionate dog and manifest an intelligence exceeding that of the highest type of chimpanzee. And they are very beautiful, as judged by the physical standards of Urantia. They are most appreciative of the attentions shown them by the material and semi-material sojourners on these architectural worlds. They have a vision which permits them to recognize, in addition to material beings, the Maurontia creations, the lower angelic orders, midway creatures, and some of the lower orders of spirit personalities. They do not comprehend worship of the infinite, nor do they grasp the import of the eternal. But they do, through affection for their masters, join in the outward spiritual devotion of their realms.
Right, so those outward spiritual devotions of their realms. See, so like I was saying, you have this quasi-sixth adjutant, see? It's not the full-on religious impulse, but it's close. You know, it's enough that as long as they really look to their masters, they can strike step with that. They have sort of a following devotional impulse like that. Right? And, you know, you see the very beginnings of that when you think about elephants. You know, and how when we study elephants, it's like, boy, it's almost like they think there was an afterlife or something, you know, the way they will go apart to die. And, you know, we think about it, it's like, wow, that's almost seeming like they're quasi-religious, right? So, you know, just the very beginnings of what, you know, would be maximized here in the Spernagia. All right, but they can't, you know, they don't literally have the spirit of worship. You know, they have a quasi-religious urge in this super additive fact of their nature that can play follow the leader.
Chris, I saw a video of an elephant that had been trained to paint a picture of an elephant.
Mm-hmm.
And it was absolutely amazing. And mm-hmm. I mean, it held the brush and it mm-hmm. painted a picture of its own kind.
Mm-hmm. Right. See, so again, just, you know, like
Photoshop.
Like they're just saying, right? I mean, it, you know, with
it's
you can begin to see little hints, but you know, but just take that all the way to where, you know, a Spernagia can pick up a brush and make a human artistic master look like, you know, yeah. someone, you know, somebody who's holding a brush with a trunk, right? All right, so, but, and see, notice what they did here in this, that, you know, they purposely used faithful horse. It's like, wait a minute, faith is, they only have faith if you're a person. Right? See, they're purposely using anthropomorphized words to remind you of how profound they will be when you experience them. You know, they will have these attributes that you have, you know, like they'll manifest a devotional urge that you'll want to call faith. And then you go, oh, but that's not faith. So faith is apparently something higher. I need to take my definition of faith up a notch. If the Spornagia are doing what I've always called faith, and they're not persons, they don't even have the sixth and seventh adjectives. See, again, you want, that's what they're trying to challenge you, you know, to recognize that just because you have a bias towards your unity consciousness and your mind energy plays out a causal sequence in a certain way, that's not faith. Right? A Spornagia can do that. So, don't try to precisely define words like personality and faith and stuff. Let go of your current definitions and see if God the Mother will grow those definitions upward over time. If you will let go of them, she can grow you. But as long as you hold on with a white knuckle grip, saying this is what is a makes me a person, she can't grow that. You've got to let go and allow these things to go up.
These guys are still the first ones I want to see.
Yeah, and you know, so an affectionate, you know that you know the root word there is facere, the Latin word to do, you know there. See again, you know, it's not a feeling, it's a verb. You know, it's not a noun, it's a verb. I mean, they're, you know, and intelligence, not just you know mentality, but intelligence. Right? They're giving you all of these higher words. You know, we aren't humans because we have intellect. Right?
Let's hope not.
Right? We're not humans just because we're affectionate. Right? You're trying to get you to challenge yourself a little bit. So and then like I said, see here they're telling you they can see all the lower orders of beings. So just like material sons and daughters can see all those lower orders of beings. But it sounds like material sons and daughters can see a little bit higher than the Spornagia.
I don't think so.
Right? And you know, when you have the humans on a world settled in light and life, they're going to be more like material sons and daughters. And probably those mortals can see higher than the Spornagia, but not a lot higher. You know, we don't know exactly how high are the lower orders of spirit personalities. They don't explain how high that goes. But all right, let's see, anything else there? You know, they would love, I'm sure, instead of using chimpanzee, they'd love to, you know, if we knew, you know, what, you know, the actual primates, as that word is used, you know, in prior to Andean and Fonta, you know, that would be a more appropriate thing instead of something as lowly as a chimpanzee.
But they're extraordinarily nurturing, and they're extraordinarily bright.
But like they said, they're just, you know, perhaps I can best suggest, right? I mean, they're just, you know, so just, you know, don't take it literally. Just take it as a suggestion and try to extrapolate up from what they're suggesting here. All right, and then the last little line here, see.
There are those who believe that in a future universe age, these faithful Spornagia will escape from their animal level of existence and attain a worthy evolutional destiny of progressive intellectual growth and even spiritual achievement.
Right. So, you know, and they would, this is not just pie in the sky, you know, yearning here. You know, think about how cherubim, for instance, you know, are modified upward. Right? So they're just, you know, they're thinking it in that sense. Well, you know, if cherubim can be modified, you know, and become ascending, why not these? Right? So they're just extrapolating that physics that they know about. Obviously, if you understood the physics of mind energy better, you could see how all you'd have to do is just add this little bit and then they would be off to the races, right? And so, all right, so let's see. Anything else there? Boy, we fleshed out the Spornagia quite a bit. All right, let's get the triangles in. You'll see they tell us even less about the triangles.
Section 8, the Gerasim Triangles. The purely local and routine affairs of Gerasim are directed from the 100 triangles. These units are clustered around the 10 marvelous structures domiciling the local administration of Gerasim. The triangles are surrounded by the panoramic depiction of the system headquarters history. At present, there is an erasure of over 2 standard miles in the circular story. This sector will be restored upon the readmission of Satania into the Constellation family. Every provision for this event has been made by the decrees of Michael, but the Tribunal of the Ancients of Days has not yet finished the adjudication of the affairs of the Lucifer Rebellion. Satania may not come back into the full fellowship of Nerleshadek so long as it harbors arch rebels, high created beings who have fallen from light into darkness.
Okay, and just like, we often call them arch rebel. Okay, so before we get to the, you can see how they quickly transition away. I mean, they don't even give you a tiny little paragraph before they start transitioning away. Okay, so you've got some sort of an arrangement, of these triangles. I mean, I don't know, are they in, point outward thing all the way around this central area again or something? Who knows? But you've got, quote unquote, 10 marvelous structures domiciling the local administration of Gerasim. See, so like I was saying, you've got all these natives, and you have, the local administration relative to all those natives. And see, none of that's revealed, but that's what this is all about. This is not, so much the administration, that we relate to. Remember we read about the squares, and all that sort of executive administrative stuff. Right? This is more just for the long-term inhabitants there. They have a whole government and whatnot that they don't talk about. They're going to have all sorts of, legislative-like bodies and, that sort of stuff. Okay, so they just give you that little bit, but they use it as the opportunity to tell you we've got another one of these surrounding panoramas. See, so this one is actually depicting the history of this world, just like we were thinking about depicting the histories of the other nativity worlds. You got the parallel thing here. The two domains overlap, because obviously the rebellion, the Lucifer Rebellion, didn't just impact the passing through phenomenon, it impacted the permanent phenomenon. All right, so you've got these 14 of our miles, 2 standard miles that have been erased. And remember how they've mentioned this before, like they're saying, Michael sort of, once he became Master's son, he took everything as far forward as you can prior to the ruling from the Ancients of Days. So he moved the ball forward as much as you can. And then everyone is just waiting, because the Ancients of Days are superior to even a Master's son. So then they're just going to give us a little bit more about this whole issue of, being cut off from the circuits and this sort of stuff with the rebellion. Yep. You got something?
Yeah, this erasure.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, shouldn't we keep a record of that?
Yeah, well, we have similar problems that come up. I just heard somebody discussing it tonight on the radio, mm-hmm. about this once famous man, Calhoun, mm-hmm. in the South.
Right.
But, and
very famous.
Colleges, a college being named after him, and mm-hmm. now
They want to erase all these names.
Feeling uncomfortable about this because he was a proponent of slavery. His ideas helped underpin that whole thing. So,
I think he beat a man to death in the center floor. We're speaking out against slavery.
The thing is, do we change everything and pretend these things didn't ever happen?
Right. So just notice how it's challenging. You know, we have a lot of conflicting thoughts in our heads about such things. Like, we want to make sure that every language that's present on the planet right now isn't lost. You know, and so we're trying to preserve all these languages, and we have a lot of exaltation of preservation. You know. We've used our spiritual consciousness relative to matter, and we have all this material idealism, you know, which is false. All material idealism is false. See, so that's what you're feeling here. See, and it is challenging. Your first thought is, no, that's ridiculous. They shouldn't, we shouldn't tear down the Jefferson Memorial just because Jefferson had slaves. But there's, you know, it's not as black and white, like you're seeing here, as you might ideologically initially think. You know, we have to try to get better at thinking, at being people of the future rather than people of the past. And we have to.
Black and white anymore.
Yeah, that's true. And that would be racist. But we have to think. We have to think about conservation, not preservation. Right. So. You know, there is a way that animals should be conserved. There's a way that languages should be conserved. There's a way that statues and edifices and whatnot should be conserved. But that's different than preserving any of those things.
You're going to keep a record of it, but they may,
I mean, so. I mean, you know, you've got, I mean, if nothing else, you've got records and, you know, in living beings, you know, people have memories. You know, it's not like when the Ancients of Days adjudicate the rebellion that they have some magic being on Uversa that, you know, hits an erase button and all of a sudden none of us, you know, remember that we lived on a rebellion sphere or anything like that. Right. So, but what's the line? I mean, I can't tell you. Right.
Well, the history won't be lost when the adjudication happens and they start to fill in this gap, it'll have to show the history.
Right. So, I mean,
true history.
Right, there you got it. You're getting to it. So I was just going to bring that up.
Big difference between history and true history.
Right. I mean, remember what I was about to remind you of is what why we get so confused about this. We're so fact-minded. You know, that facts are ends in themselves. This panoramic depiction is not a depiction of fact. It's a depiction of truth. Right? And they do not know what truth flows through those 14 miles yet. Mm. As soon as they know what truth flows through those facts, it will be properly depicted. But things are still so up in the air now. I mean, and they can't see the full truth that flows through it yet. But in retrospect, they will be able to. But normally, you can tell when things are chugging along, you kind of are in sync with the truth. You know what truth is flowing through it, and this mural keeps growing. The depiction of truth just keeps getting expressed. But then there's this big, you know, calamity. It's a disaster. It tears it apart from the cosmos. You know, and the truth is in the wholeness of the cosmos. See, so you don't know the truth right now, and so, you know, they erased it because their depiction they recognized was not, you know, the depictions they had, say, of Lucifer didn't depict the truth of Lucifer. There's a truth, you know, that will finally be depicted. And see, so that's what we can't really imagine. We think so factually about a depiction, right? You paint a tree and it's shaped like this, you know, or whatever, right? But what's the truth of the tree? How do you depict the truth of the tree in this depiction? Right?
Well, I was going to say, maybe, you know, they're created by the people who, maybe when he was running the show, he created these 2 miles or whatever, and that's the reason they erased them, because,
that's false.
Because, yeah, well, he created it. It's not, as Chris was just saying, it was his truth versus...
Again, it's not too likely that Lucifer and crew are involved in this depiction. See, again, it's not very likely, because remember, see, again, we got to remind yourself, I mean, this is not what we're talking about here, this local administration of Gerizim, that's not Lucifer and Satan and all that sort of stuff. You know, that's done back there in the circles.
Yeah. Yeah, but
this is all these unrevealed natives and their administration and stuff. It's these natives that are depicting the history of their world.
During that time,
right?
So maybe they were beguiled during that time, or some of them.
Well, yeah, I mean, sure, you can rationalize it,
That's what he's now.
But I mean, that's part of the point. I mean, they recognized that Lucifer, had an influence among them that was leading them in error, and so their minds were in error, so their depictions were in error, right? But it's not like Lucifer was ordering, I want you to paint this Mao mural of me, right? You know, it wasn't that sort of thing,
You talked earlier about how, it might have been very hard to, because of his magnanimous being, it might have been very hard to just sort of discount him. Because he was just, and so obviously it seemed like a lot of the people that were there, got to pick something that was, especially in the early parts, that was made it look out to be great and grandiose.
Again, we know that all these unrevealed beings that are involved in what we're talking about here would be very susceptible, right, to sophistry. Lower beings had lots of issues, right? So again, it shouldn't be a surprise that there would be this erasure, right? There would have been a vast span of time there that they were thrown off of the truth, right? So the depiction was erroneous.
Possibly the reason why such a long length of time for the adjudication.
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of issues with the length of time for the adjudication. You know, it's got to work itself out in all kinds of different ways. But, okay, let's see. Did we get everything? Let's see. I guess, we were at that paragraph there. See, I think we got everything there, didn't we? Let's see. Yeah, okay, let's keep going.
When Satania can return to the constellation fold, then will come up for consideration the readmission of the isolated worlds into the system family of inhabited planets, accompanied by the restoration to the spiritual communion of the realms. But even if Urantia were restored to the system circuits, you would still be embarrassed by the fact that your whole system rests under an Erlaishadec quarantine, partially segregating it from all other systems.
Okay, so you get this little bit of the technicalities of how this will work. See, first the local system is reintegrated, and then on a case-by-case basis, each of the worlds has to re-justify itself and be brought in one at a time. So you've got that, we mentioned this earlier, that you have some very vague little hints about these sorts of issues of exactly how the circuits all work and what things are cut off. And so you have this whole partially segregating it from other local systems, and they don't really explain. I mean, like we were saying, you probably have a lot more limitation of what can go out than what can come in, right? But it's all a little bit vague. But there's this whole complex system. Just remember that it's, they have all of these levels to it, and it has to be restored in a very complex way. Yeah.
And don't forget that message that got stuck.
Right, and stuck in the relay and that sort of stuff. Yes.
Embarrassed.
Okay. Yeah. So. Right, if you actually started to expand your consciousness beyond this world and started to think about yourself more as a cosmic citizen, you wouldn't be just embarrassed about the world you live on. You'd be embarrassed about the whole local system that you're in, right? You know, you'll start to feel a loyalty to your local system. Your loyalties are going to grow, you know, as you go upward, right? I mean, it starts with loyalty to clan, then tribe, then nation, then territorial state, and that's mirrored, you know, in the hierarchy here, right? It starts with the race is on a world, then it goes to the whole world, then it goes to the local system, the parallel to the nation, then it goes to the territorial state, parallel to the constellation, so you have that expanding loyalty and hence embarrassment, you know, if your family is not doing their job.
Ostracized.
Right?
But at the same time, there's been a tremendous amount of progress made during all this era. It doesn't seem like it, but
there's some blessings as well.
Right, there's all kinds of blessings that we can't see from our lowly vantage point here.
We're too close.
Yeah. If we could see it from the Constellation Father's perspective, you know, they can see how much positive has come from the Lucifer Rebellion. All right.
But ere long, the adjudication of Lucifer and his associates will restore the Satania system to the Nerlesiadec constellation, and subsequently, Urantia and the other isolated spheres will be restored to the Satania circuits. And again, will such worlds enjoy the privileges of interplanetary communication and inter-system communion?
Okay, so that's pretty straightforward. You know, of course, ere long is could be a long time from our perspective. You know, but again, they're just reminding you how it gets restored top down. You see that? You know, again, just, you know, to see that. And remember, you know, that you know, you have this, you know, like the up there where it said the restoration to the spiritual communion of the realms. Remember that with these circuits, you've got a physical energy line that's laid out, and then a spirit energy line that's laid out parallel to it, and then there's mind energy, you know, between those two plates, you know, that is the actual conductor of the communications. And remember, when they cut these circuits, they withdraw the spirit energy.
There's a beam that does that, right?
What was that?
There's a beam.
Yeah, there's the spirit energy beings, you know, that they don't reveal any details up, are the ones that handle that. But you know, so a lot of times when you're reading this and you see them referring to spirit, you know, don't think, oh, the warm, fuzzy place is going to be restored, the restoration of the, you know. No, they mean literally spirit energy. You know, you're going to be gridded again. There's going to be spirit energy present that isn't currently present right now. You know, so a lot of times it's a very just physics sort of technical explanation when they're saying things like spiritual communion. You know, and you get that sense when you get to the end here, the one we just read, interplanetary communication and intersystem communion. Right? You know, sounds a little bit more technical, you know, there. Okay, last little bit here.
There will come an end for rebels and rebellion. The supreme rulers are merciful and patient, but the law of deliberately nourished evil is universally and unerringly executed. Quote, the wages of sin is death, end quote. Eternal obliteration. Presented by an archangel of Nebadon.
Okay, so we've been reading this whole paper. It didn't seem to be too prickly. But when all is said and done, this archangel, we don't know if it's the same archangel that wrote the Celestial Artisan paper, but this archangel is not going to leave you without a little bit of prickly. I mean, it's actually a pretty stunning thing. Think about it. You know, this whole paper, you know, we've been dealing with all these issues of residences and all this sort of stuff, And you know how these papers, they often have a tendency, at the end, they bring them down to you.
Yeah.
And to notice what they did in this paper, they didn't bring them down, bring it down to you in a positive way, like they often do, right? To end like that.
They brought it down to pure reality.
You know, to end it in that way, where when it meets your bottom line, you know, they actually, you know, that archangel decides he wants to quote Paul from Romans, right? The wages of sin is death, eternal obliteration. I mean, what a way to end a paper. I mean, talk about ending it prickly. You know, the wages of sin is death is bad enough, but, you know, he thought he needed to parenthetically explain that. You know, we're not talking about physical death here. You know, and he doesn't just say eternal death. There's eternal obliteration, right? I mean, what a way to end a paper. I guess maybe we'll maybe
not
just
too many end like that, right?
No, they don't. And I guess we probably don't want to even try to start up. Maybe I don't know. What do you think? Do you want to try to maybe read the preface to the next paper, or do you want to wrap? Just talk about this stuff a little bit more and wrap it up here.
Let's wrap it up here.
Because you guys may have some more questions on this, so we could talk it out a little bit. But
you don't want to fall asleep.
But just to to appreciate here that this seems to be saying something very curious, and you'll see when we get over into the next paper that. In just a little passing comment, they will touch on this again. What's going on here is a little reminder that just because you start talking about, what in many ways is sort of this first definitive heaven of Gerasim, you've got to get yourself through the mansion worlds to get there. And the mansion worlds are only there because you need an extension of your nativity world. And just because it's post-Pentecost and everyone gets an adjuster by grace now, so everyone has a soul by grace, and we live a very short, ignorant life here. It's not very likely you're going to somehow get objective enough to go to iniquity in this short little life. Very, very likely you're going to be resurrected on the first mansion world. Everyone you know is going to be, no matter how horrendous their acts are right now. Historically, all we've had is heaven and earth. And if you can just get from earth to heaven, you're set. Right? And all of our rationalization schemes have that simple little twofold rationale to them. You've got to challenge yourself to stop thinking like that, and to expand your mortality onto the mansion worlds.
Into infinity.
Right? No, not to infinity.
Wow.
Right? Your mortality goes until when?
Fusion.
Till fusion. Right. You've got to remember that you're mortal until fusion, and so all of the things, there's a truth in the things that humans have been taught, even in very ancient times, sort of Old Testament sort of thinking. For instance, there's a truth there. It a lot of it's not factually valid anymore because everyone gets an adjuster by grace now. Right, so you don't have to try to somehow get an adjuster in this life, or you're definitely not going on, see, because you don't have a soul. So that fact is not in play anymore. But the truth of a lot of those things that at some point you have to definitively consecrate yourself to the universal harmony. There's no escaping that just because of the delights of Pentecost in terms of getting off this world. So They're going to remind us, you know, if you don't remember what the next paper is, it's the seven mansion rolls. They're going to remind us right up front that as you roll into the mansion worlds, this fact looms large. Right? The more you're moving along in the mansion worlds, the closer you're getting to that inescapable threshold where there's only two facts on the other side of the threshold, eternity and oblivion. Right? You are journeying through grace as a mortal creature, and at some point, you reach that point where you have to stand on your own, independent of grace. Right? You can't stay on this side of the threshold forever. You have to keep moving. You have to keep ascending, which means eventually as you're walking through the mansion worlds, you get to that point where you have to courageously and independently take that step yourself, where without grace, you choose.
But fear not.
Right? But fear not.
Always.
Right? I mean, but you notice
desire, really.
I'm saying things that make you think of the word fear. He said things that make you think of the word fear. The wages of sin is death, eternal obliteration. Right? He's trying to get you he's trying to spark your animal fear because you need to take a hold of it. You need to master that animal fear. Your mind energy system causally has certain forms in the wake of fear. Do you have any mastery of that? Can you dictate what happens after a fear stimulus? Or just the laws of mind energy just roll along? Do you have any self-mastery where, you know, you've got to get to the point where you can come face to face with the fact that you can be obliterated? You know, that grace has run its course, and you have to choose. Can you face that without fear? You don't have to face it in your primitive ignorant state right now because of Pentecost. But, you know, we know that there's a lot of very strong things that have been said, you know, like you can read in the Bible, for instance, about, you know, that are equivalent of the wages of sin is death. And just because there's a New Testament, you know, with all of its positive revelation of grace, doesn't change some of these facts. It just shifts them forward into the mansion worlds. So that's why he's doing this. It's not so much the last thing that he says in this paper. It's the first thing that he wants you to have in mind as you start the next paper. That's the point of it. You don't have to be afraid. I mean, for one thing, you're going to be severed of your animal, you know, foundations when you wake up in the first mansion world. That's going to help a lot in not being so animalistically fearful. Right? But instead of having just a mechanical sort of a fear thing going on in your mind, more and more you'll objectively see the facts. You know, you can look at this panoramic depiction and you can see 14 miles of blank space. You know, and that will sober you much more than some animal fear does right now. Right? That'll make a very profound statement in your mind when you see that blankness. The obliteration of 14 miles like that, as if it never was. Right?
What is there to be afraid of?
Well, there isn't anything if you're objective, right? There isn't. But there is a sobering challenge. You got to remember, grace is just to get you started. Grace doesn't carry you to the Isle of Paradise.
The thing to be afraid of for those beings who choose not to survive, not to go on, is their own choice, it's their own self-hatred, it's their own feeling separate and that they'll never ever find a place in the universe. That's the thing as I look at what fear is, it's that it comes from, it wells up from inside someone, and they're afraid of their own being.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, think about how primitive our fear of death is. Even spornaja that aren't persons are ongoing. I mean, just read about that. They go on and on and on and on and on. I mean, these spornaja have been living for billions of years. Think of how many different bodies they've had. If their bodies only last at most 250,000 years, you know, and they've been around for 200 billion or something, right? They've had a lot of bodies. Right, except for the ones, you know, new, right. But the oldest ones have had a lot of bodies, right? I mean...
But, Chris, it comes down to, yep, in the end, you know, it's more, you know, of your desire. You know, I mean, and I think that what happens today is that, especially as you read the Urantia book, and you realize, you know, that you just... It's a long ways away to get to that point at our state today. You know, even if we want to and try. But mm-hmm. but that's really what matters, that you do want to, and you do want to try. And I think that, you know, when you resurrect in the mansion worlds, and as you continue to go on, you know, hopefully that same desire to find God that you have now, you know, and all the aspects that are around it, mm-hmm. yeah. still is with you, that you've, you know, developed it. And so, and that's really what it takes.
Because we can't be obliterated. We choose obliteration. They don't impose it on.
Yeah, right, sure.
Well, there's something else here, because... This the law of deliberately nourished evil is universally and unerringly executed.
Right.
What is evil? That's, I mean,
right.
We need to figure out what is evil.
Deliberately nourished.
And it's not a matter of just wanting to survive or having good intentions. We yeah. need to figure out what they're talking about.
But you will, huh? If you want to.
Huh? There's a lot of still, what is evil that people think is good.
Right.
And that has nothing to do with what they...
But that's here, on Earth.
Right, but see, but he's recognizing my whole point.
Okay.
Right? Lucifer went to iniquity. Right? It's not because he's an ignorant animal origin being like us. Right? Right? So, to Gene's point, this is what you got to start to recognize. The difference between these two consecrations. All of human history, we've been told about the one consecration. Consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father. And we've always believed that that's all it takes. But that's only half the story. That's what it takes to get started. Will not carry you through to the Isle of Paradise. It doesn't even carry you to the sixth psychic circle.
I don't agree.
Right? That there's that other consecration of your mind to the universal harmony.
But that comes from consecrating your will, doesn't it?
No, it's a separate consecration.
Can you have the consecration of the mind without consecration of the will?
I mean, you initiate the process by consecrating your will. But the process, you know, is one of not further consecrating of the will. It's a consecrating of the mind. And it's something we really don't understand, but it's what's behind. I mean, like Gene was saying, remember, they redefine sin to be deliberate disloyalty to deity, not deliberate disloyalty to God. If their definition of sin was deliberate disloyalty to God, then sin would be about improperly consecrating your will. Right? It's not about consecration to personalized deity. It's about a consecration to deity. And see, that God is associated with your personality. Deity is the source of your mind. Consecration of your mind to the universal harmony is about your relationship to deity, not just your you know, faith grasp, your will identification to God. See, this is the fundamental thing that the fifth epical revelation is trying to add.
But you still have the choice, right? To do that.
And we don't need to add it here because of Pentecost. See, you used to have to do it. You used to have to have quite a bit of consecration of mind to the universal harmony, you know, like to get all the way to a third circular or the equivalent in order to get an adjuster. That's a lot of consecration of mind. Right? Remember that the consecration of will is basically unchanged from seventh circular to first circular, like they tell you in the Psychic Circles paper. Right? So what he's trying to get you to reflect on is the consecration of your will in the wake of Pentecost. You know, that's the good news, is that's all it takes now to get you to the next life.
Yeah.
But on the mansion worlds, you're going to have to pick up that fact again that you have to supply the favorable conditions to be grown. Yep.
In my mind, the thing that terrifies and horrifies the majority of seekers, God seekers, of all denominations, is this horror of salvation. Am I going to survive? Oh my God, can I survive? I'm not worthy to survive. Blah, 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 blah. This is all attended to, as I understand it. Mm-hmm. Salvation, since Pentecost, is assured.
Right, you should take your salvation for granted.
And so when we get to the mansion worlds, I didn't concern myself at all about that. I understand what has to be initiated in my own mind to get in step and to move forth until such time as I fuse. But it's getting off the planet that's always terrified the majority of people.
Right.
And that's no longer an issue here.
Right. So we'll wrap it up with that. You brought in a key thing there to reflect on this. Like I was saying, initially, our worldview was there's heaven and earth, right? There wasn't a whole spectrum thing that you were going to move through. It was just a binary system, and you go from one to the other, and that's it, right? And when you believe that way, salvation and survival are the same thing, okay? But they're not. You should take your salvation for granted. You will be resurrected in the next life. But you shouldn't take your survival for granted. Because just because you are saved by grace now and get to the first mansion world, literally, remember, you know, your mind has been saved as a Maranja structure. I mean, that's the literal salvation. You know, there's a copy made of your mind as a Maranja structure. It's been saved so it can be resurrected. You know, when the cosmos hits the delete button on your mind, your mortal self, mm-hmm. right, there's a copy that's been saved. Mm-hmm. Right? You can take your salvation for granted, but not your survival.
Once we get to the mansion.
But there's an awful
on the mansion worlds.
There's an awful lot of, you know, and what Jesus say, of all the ones you give me, I should not lose one.
So right, but again,
to try and help, you know, give you everything
possible. I know, but I'm just trying to get us. I'm trying to get us to transition to the next paper, so that we can understand what's going on the mansion worlds when we get to it next time. Yeah. Salvation is in the rearview mirror. Correct. So you're thinking, well, I'm done. I mean, I can put it on automatic pilot and get to paradise now. No.
The real world.
Your survival is now in play.
Right.
Now you have to deal with your survival.
Right.
And you have to choose, deliberately nourished evil. You have to have deliberately nourished goodness.
Right.
Right? It's not automatic. Your survival is not automatic. You have
to
take... You have to.
World, can we possibly choose that?
You have to take delight in cultivating, right? What they say here about it, you know, you're going to have that definitive. You'll see when we read about the mansion worlds. They'll talk about how, you know, that taking delight in cultivating that you can begin here begins to very much actualize out on the mansion worlds. That consecration of mind to the universal harmony. Right? You don't have to take delight in cultivating the consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father. You just do it. And you're done. Okay? But you have to take delight in cultivating, because it's an evolutionary process to consecrate your mind. It's an existential process to consecrate your will, because that's related to existential deity. Have humans ever had experiential deity revealed to them? No. So they don't know anything about this consecration that's spread out over an evolutionary process. That's not in any doctrine, human doctrine. Right? All they know about is consecrating to the one parent, but you have two parents. You can't get to the Isle of Paradise with one parent. It takes two. Right? And so when you go to the mansion worlds, that's in play. Your salvation is related to the father. Your survival is related to the mother. Right? They're not the same thing. They really couldn't be any different. Right? And humans have never contemplated that difference.
Right.
The fifth epical revelation is your first chance to start thinking about that. Okay, is there something on the webinar?
Yeah. Dennis asks, only 35 planets out of 619 went into rebellion.
37, actually.
Okay. Out of 619 went into rebellion, so why should we be embarrassed by our system? Only 5% of the system went into rebellion. That is something to be proud of, not embarrassed.
Even though a minority of worlds in the system went into rebellion, the whole system suffered the consequences.
Right.
Right? It's one family. Right? And like I was saying, you're embarrassed because your greater family, your local system family, has issues. Yeah. All right. All right. Okay, so next time we will get into the seven mansion worlds. And first step before we can get to the mansion worlds, we'll be talking about the probationary nursery. So that'll consume, I'm sure, the whole next session to get through the probationary nursery. but let's just take a moment and reflect on it here.